Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:08 PM that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 13th. And I thought we'd kick off with commodities because I can't remember a time in the last decade where we've had such strong commonality. And generally speaking, the best, most reliable predictions this service has ever made have been based upon commonality. It was like that when we saw the breakouts from all of the autonomies back in 2011 and 12, when we saw the breakouts in biotechnology around 2011 and 12, when we saw the breakouts in the energy sector in 2003, the gold sector in 2002, when we think about the technology sector and the fact that they were moving to outperformance right after the credit crisis in 2008, they were going to be the leaders. Now we're seeing after the pandemic that commodities are once more leading on the upside. So we do have to pay attention to this, because if these base formations are completed and these moves are sustained, then we're moving back into a period of commodity price inflation. Of course, there are both short-term and near and medium-term considerations that come into play when we look at what's going on here, because on the one hand, we know that last year there were supply disruptions because of the pandemic, because on the one hand, demand took a significant hit from traditional sources such as restaurants and hotels, and that upset supply chains, whereas then demand from consumers then jumped as well. But there was a lag, and then the question for farmers was, should they go ahead with planting? And then would they have the workers required to both plant and harvest crops? So there was quite likely a supply interruption. Is that likely to be repeated this year? That's probably the biggest question, and it's unlikely to be repeated this year, so that's one factor. But then the other thing that happened last year was this swarm of locusts, which devastated crops in East Africa, India, and China. And we even had these stories about the swarm of locusts in southern China, and the government there was using drones to use pesticides against it. And they were saying, look how wonderful our technology is that we can now deploy this. They didn't talk at all about how effective that was. And interestingly, the stories disappeared, which would and the entire reporting of the story disappeared entirely, because there were other things to talk about, like the spread of the coronavirus. But it has also contributed to a dearth of supply. So one thing that I think is particularly relevant is to look at some of these charts, because corn has clearly broken on the upside. So has soybeans, and it is very clearly breaking up and out of a reasonably long-term base formation. The other defining characteristic of these bases is that they are predominantly occurring from above the ranges that persisted all the way through to approximately 2003. Then wheat prices are just in the process of breaking higher. I'm going to start typing in the actual the charts, because just updating via this box is rather slow. Oats prices, and there has been certainly more demand for oat milk, and a lot of more people taking porridge for breakfast. So this is also a commodity that may start to do better. Now, we've definitely had some volatility in rough rice, and there was a big leap in demand with a contract change on the first month continuation chart. It creates this big step. It's less of an issue for the second month continuation chart, but the big picture here is that rough rice looks like a base formation overall, and it's the staple food for approximately half of the global population and does look like we're moving higher from here. But it's not simply that we're seeing this move higher in at the grains and beans. When we then think about some of the other food commodities like Arabica coffee, it is firming within its base formation and steadying from the region of the trend mean as well. So this also looks like a sequence of higher reaction lows and a little wedgy formation that could quite easily break on the upside. When we then think about the other form of coffee, Robusta, it's also firming now from the region of its trend mean, and this looks like a process of accumulation overall. It's definitely broken the medium-term downtrend. Orange juice is another commodity that looks almost identical to Robusta coffee. It's firming from the region of the trend mean as well. So as we look at these longer term charts, there are two things that I think really stand out. The first is that the vast majority of these agricultural commodities are finding support at the lower side of their respective ranges. Then the other point is that they are breaking out of base formations. So we're coming off of historically depressed levels over the course of the last two decades, and we're seeing increasing evidence of base formation completion right across the boards. So this isn't all about the locust invasions of 2020. There are other factors underway, and it's a confluence of factors, because when we think about, for example, cotton, the USA has banned all imports of cotton from Xinjiang in response to the humanitarian crisis that is unfolding there. I don't think that's an exaggeration, although it's certainly not being reported in that fashion. But when we think about cotton prices, they have been ranging below 100 cents for approximately 8 years, and this sequence of lower rally highs since 2018 has definitely been broken. So we're seeing that then there is clear evidence that there is extraordinarily strong commonality right across the soft commodities sector, and it is picking up the running and leading from what has already been a reasonably strong environment overall for industrial commodities. So rubber prices popped on the upside before Christmas and have so far held that breakout. Then when we think about palm oil price, it's right back in the region of its all-time peaks already. So this is also responding to the recovery overall in the oil price. So oil prices have been churning higher, just chugging out a little gain every day in a reasonably modest fashion, but prices have definitely held the move above the $50 area. Now it's coming back in to test the $60 area, and we have a little bit of a short-term overbought condition. As we look at more of these commodities, well, we can then clearly start to draw the conclusion here that investors are at a minimum hedging that there is going to be inflation. The other way of thinking about it is that they are looking at where demand may be at some point this year when vaccines are rolled out and economies are recovering, and some of the spending programs that have been promised are in fact put into place. So industrial resources are testing their highs for the last 8 years. The continuous commodity index, which is unweighted, has clearly broken up and out to new recovery highs. Very clean, failed downside break, and now rebound and breakout on the upside. This looks like a new medium-term bull market at the very minimum. So this is quite likely to be beneficial for commodity-related currencies. So when we think about, for example, the Canadian dollar, It depreciated significantly from the peak around in 2011, and now it has broken at the dollar sequence of higher reaction lows. The Australian dollar had trended downwards for a really quite prolonged period of time, and it has now also clearly broken the downward bias overall. When we think about the New Zealand dollar, it's a very similar story, and it has clearly broken its downtrend. As we look into some of the emerging markets, the South African rand has been now questioned. I guess the big question is, will it be able to break this downward bias? It's natural that we get at least some pause and consolidation in this area, but the big picture here is that the USA is doing more than anyone else to devalue its currency. And one thing that I think is particularly relevant about this rebound in the dollar index is the distinct absence of upward dynamics. There is nothing in the way of dynamics similar to what we saw, for example, in September, but most particularly from back in March. I continue to think that it is more likely than not that we are going to see at least some additional steadying in the region of the lows from early 2018, and that could well result in at least a partial, if not a full, reversion back towards the mean. But the bigger picture here is that as we look at what the future holds in terms of the reluctance of central banks to raise interest rates, the potential for inflationary pressures overall, we're looking at a prolonged period of negative real interest rates. And this is quite similar to the talk of financial repression that we had back in the early 2000s. This talk of financial repression, when the Federal Reserve was unwilling to raise rates after the, or I guess during and after the tech bust and then 9/11 and the recession that that engendered, they were willing to just keep interest rates as low as possible for as long as possible. And those negative real interest rates were the causal factor behind the bull market in gold. Well, we're not quite there yet in terms of ending this corrective phase for gold overall. I do think that it's going to require another significant phase lower in the dollar and greater fears of inflation overall. One thing, though, that I think is interesting is that bond yields have started to come back down, and we're definitely getting a little pause in consolidation in the region of about 1.2%, because that is where the yield paused back in March. Now, as this range forms, the question is whether the 1% level will act as support. Are we going to get just a little range here before the yield moves higher again? This, I think, is going to be one of the big questions for stock market investors, because the Federal Reserve has said they don't want to raise interest rates and they don't want to cut them either. So then the big question is about money supply. So how willing will they be to continue to support speculative interest and the recovery in the stock market and in the economy with additional money flows? Money flows have, or I guess M2 at least, has been contracting over the last couple of weeks, although, or at least into the end of 2020. Now, as we think about financial conditions, one thing that perhaps has puzzled people is how can the stock market continue to hit new highs even though yields are rising? Because many of us, or many macro investors and commentators, have been looking very closely at the March higher of the yield curve spread, the March higher of treasuries. We've all heard the adage from the stock or from the markets overall that everything is priced off the 10-year, and the introduction of a discount rate to the valuations of some of these extraordinarily highly valued companies, Well, it should represent a death knell. There's no evidence of it just yet. So people are obviously asking, why not? And the reason is that financial conditions are still extremely accommodative. So as we look at the Goldman Sachs Financial Conditions Index, the lower it goes, the easier financial conditions are. And as long as it is at close to these lows, much less trending lower, then we're still in a very benign liquidity environment overall. And that is the primary reason why shares like Tesla can continue to rally. So it is still in the region of the $900 area, and it was in positive territory in here today. We've also seen that some extremely highly valued companies like Shopify continue to steady within their ranges. Personally, I'm just mystified by the willingness of people to continue to spend thousands of dollars on home exercise equipment and then $500 a year on videos that become highly repetitive extremely quickly. And yet Peloton continues to march higher. When we think then about its price to sales ratio, it's at 20. So we're at these extraordinary valuations for some of these companies. But in many respects, the price to sales ratio only really becomes relevant when they run out of money. And when they've got cash on hand, then that's obviously something that's really rather attractive. Now, when we think about that from the perspective of larger companies, well, one thing that has been one of the major factors in 2020 was the significant collapse in non-financial commercial paper. So companies have been issuing substantially less commercial paper. But the other side of that is because they have been issuing long-dated paper. So the duration of debt has lengthened. Now, that's great news for companies because what it has allowed them to do is to access extraordinarily cheap financing at long maturities so they don't have to worry about paying it back. One of the factors that was, I think, problematic as people were looking at the maturity wall in 2020 and in 21 and 22 was that there was a lot of companies that, and this was in emerging markets too, where there was a ton of debt that needed to be refinanced in 2021, but that's unlikely to be a significant factor this year. So there are a large number of companies who've been able to push that maturity wall well off into the future. And it may be out there somewhere in the late 2020s when a lot of this debt will have to be refinanced. But it really removes the threat from the bond market in the short term. So high yield debt continues to march higher. The high yield spread is back in the region of its lows over the course of the last decade, and it is still contracting. Now, we may have seen the potential that the 2% handle on some of these high yield bonds is about as low as investors are willing to tolerate. But it's in many respects, as we look at what the threat represented by all this debt is, it's really about maturities and about refinancing risk because the servicing costs of some of this debt is really quite low from a corporate perspective. Of course, the fact that a lot of this debt has been issued at longer maturities means that from an investor's perspective, it's extremely interest rate sensitive. So bonds from an issuer's perspective have been fantastic over the course of the last year. Bonds from a buyer's perspective are not nearly as attractive. Now, as people start to think about where are some of the the bubbly risks that we have out there? Well, we know that there is extraordinary demand for options, and options call option volume continues to march higher. Financial conditions are very accommodative. The high yield spread continues to contract. That's all supportive of the speculative environment. Obviously, there are things that people are worrying about in terms of how quickly the rollout is taking place. When we think about our vaccines, then when we think about the kind of news that's popping up. And I saw this piece or this statistic in here today. 2/3 of COVID critical care patients are below the age of 70. I thought this was very interesting because what it tells us overall, it's not just that men are more susceptible than women, or that necessarily that younger people are now more likely to end up in hospital. It's probably much better to conclude that the social distancing measures have largely failed, that the announcement of vaccines led to some euphoria among the global population, and they gave up on social distancing, so that the number of cases and the number of people who are, as a result, as a percentage of the, or the, perhaps the best way to think about it is that the percentage of people who end up in hospital probably hasn't changed, but the fact that lots of young people are now ending up in hospital means that lots more young people are in fact catching it. Well, obviously there is a rush on to get vaccines out to people as quick as possible, but it's still going to take 3 to 6 months. It really means that there's lots of liquidity around, more liquidity on the way. And then as we think about the commodity complex, well, with all of this money printing, there is the clear scope that we are going to have inflationary pressures. And the first place that it is cropping up is in the commodity complex. But the stock market continues to be really quite steady. One thing, though, that I think is relevant is it's gone nowhere for 5 days. And these periods where we've had very low volatility. Volatility really hasn't been moving all that much, and the VIX index is coming back down towards this 20 level. Well, it hasn't been able to sustain a move below 20 since February of this year, of last year. So there is the potential that we are looking at looking at the potential for more volatility, but no evidence of it just yet. The other thing that I'm particularly interested in right now is Bitcoin, because as we look at the price, it has bounced from this 30,000 level. This was a somewhat larger reaction than we've seen over the course of the last 8 or 9 months, but it has rebounded, and it was up another nearly $1,500 in here today. Bitcoin, in many respects, is a lightning rod for speculation. And that's particularly true as institutional investors become larger holders. Now, the thing that we saw in 2017 was that Bitcoin really did get bubbly looking, and it went on a storming advance. And then it peaked as financial liquidity started to tighten. And it peaked approximately a month ahead of the stock market. Now, I do think that a lead time of a month is probably too much to hope for in this case, but I don't think that when Bitcoin peaks, it's going to do so alone. And it could well be a lead indicator for the stock market on when it does eventually peak. Whether it is a coincident indicator or a lead indicator remains to be seen. But it certainly bottomed around the same time as the stock market in March. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.